Monster Man, episode 298, Silver Warrior to Winged Warrior.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we are completing our journey through the Conjurations chapter of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. Our first monster for today is the Silver Warrior. Now, in order to understand the Silver Warrior, you need to kind of go back and look at one of the first creatures. In fact, I think it's the second in the whole section in the Conjurations chapter, and that is the Faedorn. You may recall that the Faedorn is basically a sort of elfy lady that lives on one of the shining islands, floating islands that circulate in the sky above Mistar or wherever this game is set, and sort of defends it, with apparently the aid of the Silver Warriors. So these are defenders of the Shining Isles. They're basically just enchanted silver suits of armor. They fight with +1 swords, but if they die, they just kind of melt back into the substance of the Shining Isle. How you would know what they look like, I'm not sure, since they can turn invisible and in fact remain invisible even when they're attacking. So I guess you might see them around, but I don't know why they would ever be visible when they were fighting you. You could make them be visible, I suppose. Anyway, these guys are pretty cool. They're just kind of magical knights. They definitely fit in with the kind of look and feel of the Faedorn, although they're not as aggressively 80s-y as the Faedorn is. The Faedorn has a real 80s look, whereas these guys have a much more classic late medieval sort of a feel to them with their sallets. Basically, they kind of contribute to the sort of eerie fairyland feel of the Shining Isles, which I think is exactly what you're aiming for. And they're fine, yeah. If you're going to have defenders of some mystical floating islands, I think a mysterious fey maiden attended by silent knights in shining silver suits of armor who become mere insubstantial wisps of fey stuff when they die, that feels pretty on the money to me. Speaking of henchman monsters, but a monster that has actually nothing in common other than that with the Silver Warriors. Let's now move on to the Soul Eater. Now, the Soul Eater is a big black cloud made of shining darkness or glowing darkness. I don't know what that would look like, but it's fine. It's a big smoky black beastie, and it is summoned by a cleric and sent out to go whack somebody that cleric does not like. And it comes from Master of the Desert Nomads, which we have had reason to refer to before. That's the scenario that the Juggernauts come from. And like the Juggernaut, it's another tool at the disposal of the eponymous Master of the Desert Nomads, who is himself a cleric. So I suppose that that makes sense. Soul Eater is pretty good. I guess Wisdom is probably the stat that reflects your soul, if anything can be said to. And so when it hits you, it drains your wisdom, taking away a point every time it hits someone. If you run out of wisdom, obviously you're dead. But if not, you can slowly regenerate it over time. They seem pretty good. I like, there's one rule in there that I particularly like, which is that if they fail to kill their target, they become very frustrated. And specifically, if it becomes impossible for them to kill their target, they will turn on the person who summoned them. So, and it would be impossible, of course, if, like, someone else killed that target. So if someone else kills the target of the Soul Eater, it will return and go after its summoner. And in fact, it becomes so berserk that it actually gets big stat boosts when it attacks them. So it could be a useful thing to have. If you find out, I guess this depends on your alignment, but if you find out that someone has incurred the wrath of the Master of the Desert Nomads and has got a Soul Eater coming, some of the time, the best thing that you can do is just stab them. If they're someone that can't defend themselves, sometimes you're actually better off killing them first, which is a pretty cold-hearted, but interesting. This is an example of one of those monsters that exists only to be summoned, a bit like the Invisible Stalker. I mean, it's fine. I haven't read Master of the Desert Nomad, so I don't know how, like, on theme it is. It doesn't seem like it's very on theme, but I guess the Master of the Desert Nomads is a sort of demagogue or evil cleric. So I guess summoning demons to send them after people, or summoning spiritual creatures to send them after people, that's pretty on brand for an evil cleric. And maybe he's not evil, I don't know. Although summoning spirits and sending them after people is pretty evil, I suppose. But yeah, you know, you could put this into your campaign as something that, kind of like a mastermind dispatches to go take people out, right? If you've got the kind of villain that's, you know, lurking like a spider in the center of a spider web of evil conspiracies, this definitely fits into that kind of niche. Finally, we've got the Winged Warrior. This one comes from B8, Journey to the Rock. And it is basically a robot. It is a humanoid figure, kind of a living crystal statue that is equipped with metal wings. Now, I don't know why it is not a golem, flying, and at this point, I no longer care. There is kind of a weird thing about it. It goes out of its way, the entry goes out of its way to point out that the Winged Warrior can fly because it has a permanent fly spell cast on it. But there's also a line in here which says that it can't fight while flying because it uses, you know, when it fights, this is kind of a neat image, it uses the sharp metal edges of its wings to deliver a slashing attack. It's a bit like the Vulture in Spider-Man. Does he do that? There's definitely some Marvel villain who has, like, wings under their arms and slashes with them and, like, stops bullets with them. Maybe I'm thinking of the way the Falcon stops bullets in the Marvel movies. I don't know. There's a lot of people with wings. It's a pretty common power fantasy. But speaking of common power fantasies, that's not how the fly spell works. Like, if you cast fly on somebody, they don't suddenly grow wings. So, if it has wings that it can fly with, I don't know why it needs a fly spell. And if it has a fly spell cast on it, I don't know why it has wings. I guess what they're trying to say is that, you know how when you create a magical artifact, it involves casting certain spells, that fly is one of them to create this thing which can fly, and it's not like a fly spell. This thing can fly all the time, but the limitation is that it needs to use its wings to fly. So okay, I talked myself into it, but it's still a bit funny. I mean, I would forget about the fly spell, which is completely irrelevant to the creature as it appears in play, and just say, like, yeah, it's got wings, it can fly. Again, these are very, they're very 80s monsters. Again, they're made of shining crystal and you know, bright metal, and I feel like that's a vibe that you're gonna get in, that, you know, they remind me a little bit of the Reflector, just in terms of the kind of sleekness and glossiness and shininess. I keep feeling that if these monsters were all in the same dungeon, it would be a dungeon that had really bright lighting and like a lot of lens flare. That kind of like cross-shaped Peter Davison era Doctor Who sort of lens flare. Maybe I'm only saying this because I think they sound a little bit like Chameleon from Doctor Who. The Marvel character with the wings is Darkhawk. That's the guy I'm thinking of. Or maybe Archangel. He could shoot the feathers out of his wings. They were like little knives. That'd be a pretty cool ability for this thing to have. But anyway, yeah, I sort of want these guys to attack the Shining Isles, you know? I'm getting a whole kind of glam rock D&D aesthetic out of this conjuration section with its shiny reflectors and shiny silver knights and probably some pretty shiny living statues and, you know, I feel like there's something to be said for these guys. With the, like that She-Ra aesthetic, lots of bright colors and pastels, and particularly if you have like the kind of dirty, muddy, you know, rats and daggers, Warhammer-y, dirtbag OSR kind of ground level feel to your campaign. But then when you go up to the Shining Isles, it's all rainbow unicorns and fighting silver brain men from the future, and then you go back down to the, you know, the crap sack sandbox. I feel like that's maybe the way that you get away with it, because like I like that glam D&D look, but I don't know if it's for every day, you know what I mean? I feel like that's a sometimes food, so you could limit it to the Shining House. I mean, the Fedorn's already got the headband, so she descends with her army of silver knights and is like, oh mortals, the Shining Isles are imperiled. Waves of deadly winged crystal warriors are threatening the fair spires of our lovely home, and, you know, we need you to come and hit him with your longsword. Yeah, okay. Now I want to see that aesthetic replicated in miniatures. I feel like you could do it with, you know, like a lot of rhinestones and some super glue. I should be taking notes. I tried to build a giant crystal golem miniature out of like lots of reflective plastic and stuff, but the materials didn't stick well, and I wound up just getting glue all over my fingers. Okay, yeah, all right. I feel like it's the kind of thing that's hard to convey in a campaign, right? Like, there are days that you wish you were an artist, because I feel like that's something that is distinguished from what I'd normally be running only by aesthetics rather than by, like, content. There are lots of ways in which the way you present things completely changes how they feel, regardless of whether the thing is mechanically any different, and I feel like this would be one of them. Alright, well, I've talked myself into liking the Winged Warrior, and if I've talked myself into liking a monster, then that means that we've concluded another episode of Monster Man. In our next episode, we're going to be beginning a new chapter of Creature Catalog as we take a look at the humanoids. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.